Moadim LeSimcha, today's daf is daf Kuf Zayin. We're holding in Masechet Bava Kama, the ninth perek, HaGozel Etzim. And we've been discussing the fascinating sugi of Toin Ta'anat Ganav. We got up to Kuf Vav Omid Beit. And Reb Chiya Bar Abba yesterday quoted Reb Yochanan as saying that the did of Toin Ta'anat Ganav is a halacha that applies not only to the din of a pikadon, but it also applies to an aveda, because the Torah also mentions alkol dvar pesha, alkol aveda. So apparently, the din applies also to geneva. There was another chiddush of Reb Chiya Bar Abba and Reb Yochanan, which is that there's also a din of tavach u'machar of a toin tanach ganav, which means that you would be mishalem arba v'chamisha for being an imaginary ganav, so to speak. Toin tanach ganav. Today, there's further chiddush from Reb Chiya Bar Abba and Reb Yochanan, and we start three lines up from the bottom of the page. Om Reb Chiya Bar Abba, Om Reb Yochanan. The latest chiddush is that a toin ta'anat ganav pepikadon eno chayav ad sheyechfor b'miktzat v'yode b'miktzat. Now this is a remarkable, remarkable halacha. Remember that we know, forget about the psukim for a moment, we know that when it comes to someone who claims that you owe him money, he cannot make you swear that he owes you money. He comes along and he says to you, I lent you money. You said, I don't know what you're talking about. You walk away. But the moment you agree it, you say, oh, it's true, you did lend me money. I'll pay you back. He said, well, there's only $50 here. I lent you $100. At that point, he could be b'chai of you to make a shvuah, because that's called modeh b'miktzat ha'ta'anah. You admitted it partially. We're going to get into that today. So in other words, there's a difference between somebody who's already involved himself in the litigation. He admits that there's what to litigate. So now the question is, do I owe you the whole thing? Are you part of it? But where you have no basis at all, you don't even have an eid echad for suggesting that the guy owes you the money, then you cannot litigate it. If you have an eid echad, he can also force the person without a motive of mitzvah into taking a shvuah. Now, I'd like you to take a look at the parshas in the Torah, bring your chumashim, and let's examine where all of that comes from and whether it would apply to the din of the shomer as well, of the pikadon. So let us turn to Parashat Mishpatim, Perek Chaf Beit, and starting in Posik Vav, let's take a little closer look at the Parashat about Shomrim. So Pasuk Vav begins with, Yitein ish areeu kesev o kelim lishmor, v'gunav mibeit ish, im yimatze aganav yishalem shnai. Alright, now that, we start with the Pasuk. Remember that there was a whole question whether that's talking about the real ganav, whether he's the ganav. The next part, so if we find the ganav, then the ganav pays double. Im lo yimatze haganav. If we don't find the ganav, then v'nikrav ba'alabayit elo Elohim, the owner of the kesev okelim, goes to court. Im lo shalach yado b'imlachet re'eu. Now we know that whenever it says goes to court, elo Elohim, we learn out from other places where it uses that language that it means shvuat Hashem tia ben shnei. He has to swear. And what does he swear? As it says, im lo shalach yado b'imlachet re'eu, he has to swear that he has not in any way violated the trust of the pikadon and use this for himself. Right? So far, so good. If he says, well, I have to admit that I actually took it and used it instead of just watching it for you, at that point he would be chayev to pay for anything that happened to it, because he violated the trust. He basically stole it. Al kol devar pesha, al shor, al chamor, al se, al salma, al kol aveda. And yesterday, remember that Reb Yochanan was derish al kol aveda, that these halachas apply to aveda as well. Now here comes a very strange piece in the pasuk. Asher yomar ki huze ad Elohim yavod vashneim. When he says this is it, then they come to court. Now what does that mean when he says this is it? Then they come to court. First of all, I thought they were already in court. It said before v'nikra balabayit al Elohim. That means he went to court. So is this a different going to court? Is it a different discussion? Asher yashir Elohim yeshalib shnayim l're'ehu. And again, we seem to be talking about a ganav here. We're talking about kefel. So this we understand to be a reference to toin ta'anat ganav. And we don't know what that means, asher yomar ki huzeh. Now let's go further. The next pasuk talks about ki yiteinu shereihu chamor shor seh. In this case, it doesn't say anything about being potter from a ganev. On the contrary, it goes on in pasuk yudalef to say vim ganov yiganev mimo yishalim v'bala. So obviously, this is a different shomer who is chayev on ganeva, whereas the previous shomer was potter on ganeva, and therefore, if he said it was nignav, then they go to court. But in this case, if he says it was nignav, he pays. So what happens here to make him potter? An ones. Made, nishba. So he was attacked by muggers, or the thing was hit by lightning, whatever. Here he would be potter. But on a taina of Geneva, or aveda, anything that would be less than nish, than made, or nishba, or nishba, then he would have to pay. So this we understand to be a shomer sachar. So he has more responsibility. In Pasuk Yud Gimel, we begin yet another parasha, which talks about She'ilah. V'yichi yish'al ish me'em re'ehu. Right? It's a new din. Over there, doesn't matter, even if it dies. Even if it's nishbar o meit, as opposed to the previous case. When nishbar o meit is potter, in this case, if it's nishbar o meit, you're chayev. Why? Because you borrowed it. This is for your use. Once it's for your use, then already you're more responsible. So we have your story of three different shomrim. The Torah does not discuss what the din would be if you've rented the use of something. And that's a machlokas, how we view a rental, which we'll get to. It's not main major issue in our Masechta right now. Then if you take a look in Chof Dalet, in Kesef Talve et Ami, et Ani Imach, and so on and so forth, which involves as well elements of Pikadon, which you could take as a mashkan, Im Chavol Tachbol, Salmat Re'anah, and so on. So it means we have a story of three shomrim. As I mentioned to you yesterday, the Torah inserts other issues with Shoel because that is a lokum ba'alim story. And therefore all of the issues in which a person acts as someone he isn't, so that he is now someone who seduces a woman though he's not a husband, he has to act as a husband. We talked about this yesterday. But skip all those related issues and we have basically three shomrim, shomer chinam, shomer sachar, and shoel in order. One is potter on geneva v'aveda, and therefore gets involved in toin tanat ganav. One of them is chayev geneva v'aveda, can only get involved in tanat meto nishbar on nishba. One of them is chayev even for nishbar and nishba, which is the shoel. Followed by the din of lending money in kesef talveata. So what's left here that makes no sense is the posik that starts talking about a new court case, which was posik chet, where somebody says ki who's that? And now they're back in court all of a sudden, even though apparently the guy already swore that lo shalach yadomim lachad reyehu. Now what the heck is this all about? So Chazal or Dorish, that the words ki hu zeh mean that they are arguing about what, not about whether. That means motive and mikt. So one is saying this is it, and the other one is saying no, there was more than that. Okay, that appears in the middle of the story of the Shomer Chinam, who's being toin tanat ganav. Therefore, tain is now Rabbi Yochanan. Here's how Rashi learns the sugya. It's quite a complex sugya. Here's how Rashi learns the sugya. Very straightforward. Rabbi Yochanan says the pasuk appears in the din of Shomrim, does not appear in the din of Im Kesev Yaveh Et Ami, and therefore it's a din that is unique to a case of Shomer. If you give somebody something to watch for you, and now there's an argument about what the level is of how much I owe you, then if you're arguing about how much, then you got to go to court. But if you're arguing about whether, and this guy says, never happened, or I don't owe you a penny, in that case, the Torah was not mechayev you to go to court, since the Torah wasn't mechayev you to go to court. And we've already established that the din of kefel for a toin tanat ganav is only in a case where Beit Din makes you swear. Well, obviously, if you're not going to go to court to swear, there can't be a din of toin tanat ganav. Therefore, says Rabbi Yochanan, a toin tanat ganav can only happen if there was made of a miktsata ta'ana. But if they're arguing completely about whether something happened, then it never gets into court for a shvua. Okay? Very clear. So that means in addition to the other issues that are involved in toin tanat ganav, which is that there has to be a shvua, and that there has to be a case where he's a shomer chinam, particularly because otherwise he'd be chayav on geneva v'aveda, and that it's bedafke ganav, and not gazlan, or not avad, there's also, by definition, the need for the shvua, which means that there needs to be motive and miktzat. my time, but why do I say this? Says Rabbi Yochanan. Let's just read it again. Om Rabbi Barav, Om Rabbi Yochanan, three lines up from the bottom. Hatoin ta'anat ganav v'pikadon, which we've been talking about here as being mechayev kefel, eno chayav ach yichpor b'niktzat v'yodem b'niktzat. Because that's the only time that the Torah is mechayev the shvua. And remember that any other shvua that you take, you jump up and you make a shvua or whatever, that's not the kind of shvua as we saw yesterday. That will be Mekhayev Yukev. If you're Kofatz v'nishba, there's no din of Tashlumei Kev. If you were Nishba Chutz l'Bezden, there's no din of Tashlumei Kev. So there in Ochev, Achichpor b'miktzat, v'yodeh b'miktzat, and why do I say this? Because I know how to read. My timer, it says in the middle of the parsha, of the din of Torita Anad Ganav, the Omar Kro, Ki Hu Zeh. Says, Asher Yomar Ki Hu Zeh, Ad Elohim Yavod Var Shnehem, and only then Asher Yashir Ne Elohim Yishalim Shayim Reyehu, which means without the argument about Ki Hu Zeh, this never happens. Now this statement of Rabbi Yochanan is pleading to Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef. This is the exact opposite approach that Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef takes. The Omar Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef, this pasuk has been lifted out of the parsha of Im Kesef Talvei Adami. And therefore what we have is Iruv Parshiot. Now, this makes a great deal of sense, says Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef, because as you just pointed out, it says to go to court twice. Now, why in the world does it say go to court twice in the middle of the same case? Right? Ave Elohim, twice. One, Asher lo shalach yado b'mlechet re'ehu, and the other one, Asher yomar ki hu zeh. Does that make sense? So I'll tell you what's happening. The parsha immediately after the parsha of the Shomri discusses the din of Im Kesef Talvei Adami, correct? But that parsha is dealing with taking a mashka and how to treat a man that you're taking a mashka. It's not getting into the issues over there about the tviyah in court and at what point the guy would have to swear that you didn't lend him money or whatever the case may be. Therefore, the dinim of the tashlumim were subsumed in the dinim of the tashlumim of Shomri. In other words, what happens is, Shomer Chinam opens up the story of four cases of court issue. The case may have come to court because you were Shomer Chinam, may have come to court because you were Shomer Socher, and you were claiming, not Kedeva Baveda, obviously, because it wouldn't help you, but you were claiming Nishbaro Nishbaro Meit. You could have been in Shoya. You were claiming it was Meita Machvat Malacha. You could have been the beneficiary of a loan, Im Kesef Talvei Adami, and you were claiming the loan never happened. Those cases are all going to be addressed in the opening parasha. Okay. The pasuk goes out of its way to take two psukim, one which contextually is referring to pikadon. Im lo shalach yado b'mlechet re'ehu. Obviously, that's an absurd thing to discuss when it comes to a loan. The whole purpose of a loan is for me to use the money. So that's the pasuk that's referring to the shomer. Then it throws in another pasuk, which is referring to something else entirely. That's talking about a case of a loan. It's not talking about shlichus yad, obviously. I meant to use the loan. But what I could argue about is whether the loan took place. So there the Torah is saying, if you claim a loan never took place, you don't even have to go to court. Why is he taking you to court? Let him prove the loan took place. So if you admit the loan took place, now the question is, ki hu zeh? You're saying, here it is. He's saying, no. It was much more than that. Where's the rest of it? No, that's all that it was. Now already you're involved in the case. Then you have to go to court. You have to swear. That's what of a mikzah. Nothing to do with pikadon at all. That's a din that's unique to loans. When it comes to the din of the shomer is admitting he's a shomer. What's the point of made of a mikzah when it comes to a shomer? He's saying, yes, I'm a shomer and something happened. You're claiming, no, nothing happened. You stole it. No, I mean, I swear I didn't steal it. Over there, I don't need to get into modem and mixas in order to be chayef to swear. We're already in bed with each other here. I admit that I'm a shomer. It's okay, so how am I going to get out of it? By giving a shvua and letting the guy who gave me the pikadon accept my shvua since he was trusting enough to give it to me. In the first place, makes a great deal of sense. So that is called Iruv Parshiot Katuvka. The Torah has thrown into the Parsha of Shomer Chinam all of the issues of court cases for the four Parshiot that follow. Shomer Chinam, Shomer Socher, Shoel, and Halva'ah of money. This is how Rashi learns. I mean, it doesn't explain it as beautifully as I did, I must say. But, no, really, I mean, in other words, he doesn't give much information. But I'm saying that this is the inherent logic of Rashi's position. Those who argue on Rashi don't address this inherent logic at all, because at the end of it, a lot of problems. Because on the surface, it sounds crazy. What do you mean a pasuk was lifted out of there and thrown into him and the whole thing's nuts, right? How could Rashi claim that it isn't even referring to the case of the Shomer it's written? On the basis of what? I mean, how would Rabbi Bar Yosef come up with such a chutzpah to say, seems to me it's inappropriate to belong here, it really belongs later. What is that supposed to mean? But anyway, this is Rashi's approach. Very simple and very understandable. Now, the approach of the other Rishonim takes into consideration. There's two completely different issues over here. When you're arguing about whether something happened, to say that there's a tzad that Rabbi Yochanan is saying, if I'm talking about, I claim that there was an accident that happened over here, a ganav took the whole thing. Why in the world would there have to be an argument about how much the ganav took? That wouldn't make any sense. That would be motive and mitzvah. The only thing that could possibly be motive amiktas on is to separate the issues. First of all, there's the question about whether something happened. Then there's the question about how much. The only part that makes sense to talk about the similarity of a shomer to a borrower is where they're arguing about whether the shmirah took place at all. So in other words, if you go to a guy, he said, I asked you to take care of 100 of my cows. He said, I never saw you before in my life. I don't know what you're talking about. So obviously over there, there's no shmirah to shomerim. He's not a shomer as far as he's concerned. Proves that I'm a shomer. So if you're getting into court anyway because he says, no, I am a shomer, but not on 100 cows, on 50 cows. Okay, well, where are the 50 cows? Oh, well, the 50 cows were stolen. So if I'm swearing anyway about the question about whether I'm a shomer, which makes sense, that's similar to halvaha, then I'm going to be swearing about the 50 cows that were nedas. But otherwise, maybe the Torah wasn't mechayev me b'chalal shvuah. So we need to be mechalek, and why do we need to be mechalek? Because, say the other Rishonim, nobody would say that Iruv Parshiot means it doesn't refer to where it is, it only refers to something else. That's ridiculous. The question is only whether it also refers to Halva, not whether it also refers to Pikadon, whether it only refers to Pikadon, rather. Right? So according to Rashi, it's a zero-sum game. Either Kiyuz as a reference to Pikadon, and a Love, who is Kofer Bakol, would still have to take a shvuah, or is referring only to halva'ah, and a shomer would not be potter in a case of kofar b'kol. That's Rashi. Tosu says, obviously, the parsha is referring to where it occurs. Nobody's going to argue with that. Question is, does it also apply to halva'ah? So therefore, says the Rabbi Ratan, the machlokas is, in terms of the Pikadon issue, is as follows. According to Rabbi Yochanan, since Rabbi Yochanan does not say Iruv Parshiyot, he says it only refers to this Parsha. Yes, there's also a Dinamotah B'mitzas Mitzad Asfara by Halva. But when it refers to this Parsha, it has to be explainable within this Parsha. Therefore, there needs to be three separate components to every Toin Ta'anat Gana. Component A, Modeh B'mitzad. I admit that there was a pikadon. You gave me something. Component B, I have to be kofer b'mikta. I have to argue about how much that was. Component C, I have to now claim that something happened to the part that I was keeping. But suppose you say, no. We're discussing the entire grouping. We're discussing not only pikadon, we're discussing halva. Then there's no need for me to say it. That I've got to be arguing with you about how much, what, in what. Yeah. So we have moda, according to this, we have moda. I admit that the issue took place. Just open a new bottle. I admit that the issue took place. You gave me something to watch. I admit that it's the same number that you said. You do? Doesn't it say ki hu zeh? That part is a reference specifically to the halva. I mean, obviously each thing fits into where it fits. But since it occurred in Parshat HaShomrim, it's still true that there needs to be an argument and a hodah. So the hodah kapot is, I admit that I'm a shomer, and the thing that we're arguing about is, was there an ones or was there a geneva or not? That's all. But if you hold, however, like Rabbi Yochanan, You can't say that, because Rav Yochanan says, look, there's no Eruv Parshiyot, it occurs here. It's got to be completely understandable within this context. And that means Kihu says that they're arguing about how much, besides arguing about what happened to it. Therefore, says Rabbeinu Tam, Rav Yochanan is claiming that you need Moda only b'miktzat, because you also need a Kfira, in the Etzem Pikadon. You say 100 cows, I say 95 cows. Furthermore, you say, I owe it to you. I say, it was all stolen. Now we get to court. Now there's a shura. Now I'm going to have to pay you kefel if it turns out that I took it myself. Comes on Reb Chiya bar Yosef, and he says, no, it's an Eruv Parshiyot. You don't need to explain every last element in all of the cases. You simply need a partial agreement. I agree that I am a shomer. And a partial disagreement. I claim it was stolen. You say, I don't believe it. Right? That's the case. So now it comes to court. But you don't need to be arguing about how many cows were given into your rishos. Very clear.
Amen.
Yes.
When there's a writing admitting the shomer.
A what?
A writing admitting that there was a deposit.
Yeah.
So now we have the mitnas of the deposit, and now the question is how much will you give back or not, or was stolen. What happens if you there's a partial return? That when you get into the discussion, how much will they, how much should they give you? How much gives back?
All right. So that now, you mean they're arguing about whether I paid or not?
No, I say somebody says I paid half back. Now the argument is did I pay all of it, or how much did
I pay? That's also, that would also be a case. If I say I paid you 50, and you say, no, I paid you the whole thing. Because I know you paid me half.
Then we're arguing on the...
That's also a motive of mixing.
How much you left with...
Right. Correct.
It's like a new deposit.
Yeah, could be good then. Right? Yeah. But that's mainly above mitzvah here. It's not for us here. That's Hilchot To'in V'nitan, which is not really part of Baba Kama. We're getting into this only secondarily to the fact that you have to give back a geneva. So we started talking about at what point you consider it to be a gazelin. So if you keep something that belongs to somebody else, that's also a form of gezela. Therefore, it becomes part of our discussion. But the main issues of the dinim of Moda B'Miktzas are really not for us here in Baba Kama. In other words, commercial intercourse is the topic of Bav Mitzia, not of torts. Baba Kama is about torts. It's just that commercial intercourse involves torts where I end up taking something from you. Now I'm damaging you.
The case we're talking about, aren't most of them have a writing?
It's irrelevant to us right now. But it's going to complicate things terribly.
That's an admission.
I simplify things very much by giving the philosophical background. Obviously, the contract complicates things. Okay. Now, the other approach here, which the Rosh takes, and the other Rishonim takes, is that according to Reb Chiya bar Yosef, since we have an Eruv Parshiyot, this is a brilliant explanation, since we have an Eruv Parshiyot, what we need to look at are only those things that are in common. That's what Eruv Parshiyot means. Eruv Parshiyot means we're looking at a commonality. The commonality means that according to Reb Chiya bar Yosef, only the type of shvua that could be had in common with a halva'a and a pikadon would be included in the din of Moda B'Miktzas. So when it comes to a milva, the only type of question could be, how much was it? But if the question has to do with what happened to it, since that's irrelevant to a loan, I really don't care that you lost the money that you invested. That's not my business. I want it back. That part has nothing to do with the din of Moda B'Miktzas. That's what Eruv Parshiyot means. So that means that according to Rabbi Yochanan, since it's not Eruv Parshiyot, ki hu zeh, might have to do with things that are specific to a pikadon. I say they were all nenas. They were all nignav. You say, no, only half were nignav. The other half is in your barn. Fine. Then you'd have to swear as a Moda B'Miktzas. But according to Reb Chiya bar Yosef, no. That case would have no application at all to halva. So that couldn't be a case of shvua, you see. It would have to be something similar to halva. The only thing that's similar to halva is how much was lent. In this case, how much was nifkat. All right, there are other approaches. But again, the main difference is, according to Rashi, Eruv Parshiyot means unique. It applies to milva and not to pikadon, which is very dramatic. According to the other Rishonim, it definitely applies to the pikadon. The question is how much it applies to milva, or the question is how similar it has to be to milva, even in the case of pikadon. So those are the three basic approaches. So therefore, according to Reb Chiya bar Yosef, continues the Gemara, Eruv Parshiyot Ketuv Kan, V'chiktiv Ki Hu Zeh, that part about Ki Hu Zeh is referring to a milva. And why is that so? Now, the why is that so, according to Rashi, simply means, why do I suggest that a pasuk that appears in the middle of the parsha of the Shomrim is actually meant to apply specifically to a loan? Is that not strange? To which Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef replies, of course, according to Tosfos, there's nothing strange. So the question doesn't even make sense. Why do I say this? He has to explain the question in a completely different way, which we'll get back to. But according to Rashi, that Iruv Parshiot means that, gosh, it doesn't belong here at all. It only belongs in a milveh. Why do I say that? Well, because milveh, you see, it makes sense. Kidarabba. The Omar Rabba, Mipne Ma Amratora Bodebi Miktata Na Yishava. Why is it that the Torah demands a shvua from a mode of a miktat? Because, I mean, normally we have a klal. Motzi mechavero lavaraya. A guy admits something, gives the money back to you. What the court should say is, look, this guy's obviously an honest man. I mean, do you have any proof that it was more than this? No? Motzi mechavero lavaraya. If you can bring us any witnesses or documents, that's fine. You have 30 days to come back to court right now. Court dismissed, right? That's what we would do. So it's a very strange thing for the Torah to demand that somebody has to take a shvua because somebody's claiming that he owes him more. Why don't we, as Abba said, look at this as a new case. I'm paying you the 50. Now I don't owe you anything. So where does this come up? Exactly. Says Rabba. We'll get there. The Omar Rabba, Mipnei Ma Amra Torah Modebe Miksata Ta'ana Yishava. Why does the Torah say such a strange thing? Because the truth is, it's all based on psychology. The psychological analysis is this. Chazaka, ein adam me'iz panav bifnei ba'al chovo. When it comes to a loan, a guy was being very nice to you, lent you money. Not only does he lend you money, which means being nice to you, he also trusts you. The norm of human psychology is that you respond in kind. So you have a built-in psychological need to show that you're honest and to be honest. So therefore, it's very difficult for you, even though you'd like to get out of having to pay this loan. And there's also a need in you to steal. You can't get up the guts to simply tell a guy who trusted you and was kind to you, I'm walking off with your money. It never happened. So therefore, ein adam me'iz panav bifnei ba'al chovo. The truth is that the other drives were haibakule boy de nichbre. He would like to walk off with all the money, like every competitive entity in a Darwinian world. But haide lo kafre, the only reason that he can't deny owing the money is because of the pressures that are created through cooperation, because ein adam me'iz panav. Therefore, the drives in the other direction would have driven you to admit, if I can't get up the guts to say it never happened, so then I might as well give in and say, okay, I owe you the money. But there's a way out, you see. The way out is to rationalize. And here's how you're going to rationalize. It's very hard for me to pay up this whole thing now. If only he would come back in a month, I could pay him the whole thing. I intend, of course, to pay him the whole thing. And I'm not going to lie to the guy, at least not permanently, because he trusted me and he was nice to me. So what I'm going to do is, I'm going to pay him what I can right now. Oh, yes. Gee, Joe, you did lend me money. But I'm sure that it was only $50. Here's the $50. Hey, come on. It was $100. Really? No, I'm quite certain it was $50. But of course, next week, I'm going to call him up and say, oh, my goodness, I just found a little note I had written to myself. It was $100. Please come and pick up the rest of the money or I'll come right over. So I'm going to end up redeeming my position for him. Of course, in the end, you'll never pay him. But this allows you to do the first step, right? I'm really honest. I'm going to be paying you. Right now, I'm only going to say that I'm giving you what I can easily afford right now. And I'll pretend that's the whole loan, and I'm going to redeem myself later. Okay. So the truth is, he would like the alternative pressure psychologically is to be fully honest. But that costs too much. So the reason that he's taking this strategy is because he's telling himself, well, if I'm going to admit owing him the whole thing, he's going to try to collect the whole thing right now. Gee, I wonder why. So how about if I put things off? Let me push this off just for now. When I get money and I can afford to pay him back, of course, I will pay him back. The Torah, cognizant of these contradictory drives, wants to push you over the edge. So by adding an additional pressure, which is the need to take a shvuah, you're not going to be able to rationalize the denial, because then you're going to have to actually swear in court. That's a lot different than telling yourself, I'll get back to next week, it's just a little white lie. Now it becomes a serious diuretic oath. Well, it's not worth burning in hell. I might as well admit it. So therefore, the Torah therefore puts the additional pressure of a shvua, so that he should now admit the entire thing. Now, all of this would only apply where the guy was nice to you. So milta hudikala meimahof. The guy's lending you money, trusting you to spend money and ultimately pay it back. It's very hard to deny that guy. But a guy who said, would you watch this for me? Oh man, well, I'm supposed to do him a favor, but I'd give it back still. Be good enough, I did him the favor, now I'll keep it. So in that case, the truth is... the truth is that a person is willing to be mazed when it comes to that. Therefore, if he admitted it, on the contrary, he's an honest guy. But we're going to make him not pick a shvua. He did a favor for the guy. How this relates to Shoel is rather strange. I mean, by Shoel, he also did you a favor. So in Achinami, there are Rishonim who suggest that with this logic, the way that this is all Rashi's understanding logic, with this logic, the Shoel would be exactly the same. As the Milhar Rashi is saying, is in cases where indeed you did him the favor, not he did you the favor. All right. It's a side issue. Now, obviously, all of this makes zero sense according to Tosfos. Because according to Tosfos, everybody's agreed that the din of motive and mixus applies in both cases. So what are we coming now to talk about what the meaning is by milk? Therefore, says the Rabbeinu Tam, the Gemara's question is, as Scott suggested, a completely different question. And that is, once we are creating the situation of the Shvua, where a guy says motive and mixus, we are now creating a counter pressure. The counter pressure is for the guy to lie entirely. Why should I get involved in taking a shvuah? I'd much rather, if I'm not going to pay, if the Torah would have left me alone, I would have at least been willing to pay half. But now the Torah says, why, you're going to pay half? No, we're going to put a shvuah on you, so you're going to pay the whole. No, you're going to put a shvuah on me, so that I'm going to deny the whole thing now, that I don't have to take the shvuah, right? So what really happens is that now that the guy is coming along and saying half, the court should say, well, you know, he must be telling the truth. Because if he said he didn't know anything, he wouldn't even have to take a shvua. Now he's saying half, we should definitely believe him. So then we run around with a catch-22. If he's more believable in saying half, then he should less take a shvua, not more take a shvua. So that's what, according to Rabbi Natam, the Gemara is asking. Can you tell me what the logic is of creating a circular reasoning? To that, the Gemara answers, it isn't circular because of the context of socially developed tribes. You don't have the ability to come right out and lie to the guy's face in the case where he trusted you and was kind to you. There's just equal pressure, equal competitive pressure, fascinatingly, to create social stigma by which people need to respond in this way. Therefore, it does make sense, and it's not a circular argument. And that's all the Gemara is concerned about. There's very, very different ways of learning the sugya. Both very beautiful, profound implications to human psychology and the extent at which the Torah is willing to go to influence the decision-making process in the brain. Right? But this is fascinating because it removes morality from the issue completely. And as we saw when we discussed the overall issue of Nezikin, the issue of the Nezikin does not deal with morality the way Rebbe has structured the Nezikin. Avos. Avos is part of the Nezikin, but it comes as an afterthought. It's all based on the natural drive of competition. And therefore it's called Yeshuot. It's called saving yourself, as Rashi says. It's all based on looking out for number one.
As opposed to
trying to create a moral vision, which people are supposed to keep, so that they will want to choose that which is moral. If we were dealing with morality, we would not be dealing with trying to force your brain to do things that are mechanistic. This Gemara is all mechanistic. Right? In other words, it's assuming that there's an electrochemical balance that's going to be reached by your brain, which we are now trying to influence. There's no element of morality here.
What about fear of punishment? That's out of
No, this is also fear of punishment. That's fine. But we don't try to set it up as a moral issue. We're trying to pressure you so that it's worth it for you to do what's right. Okay. So sitzkabe milvu dikala memrahachi, avagabe pikadon meyizu meyiz. Now that's the difference, says Rabbi Bar Yosef, between the two situations. Tani rami bar chama. Arba'a shomrim tzrichim kefira b'miktzat v'hoda'a b'miktzat. There are four different shomrim that do require a moda b'miktzah situation before forcing you to take a shvua. And in other cases, if you made a shvua, you would not be chayef for toita not ganav. And what would that be? So obviously he disagrees, according to Rashi, with Rabbi Bar Yosef completely. What would that be? As Rabbi Bar Yosef says, no. Nothing to do with pikadon, only halva'ah, right? What would the situations be? Shomer chinah, shoel, and osei sachar, and the socher. Omar Rava says, Rava, now, where does Rami Bar Choma get all this from? My time in Rami Bar Choma. Well, shomer chinam, it's obvious. That's where the pasuk appears, ki hu zeh. So by shomer chinah behed yektiv be ki hu zeh, it says it straight out in the pasuk. And that's the way Rabbi Yochanan understood the pasuk. Shomer sachar. Well, it says in both of those cases, ki yitain ish, correct? So in both cases, nitina. That's gzera shava, which tells us that a shomer sachar has the same dinim as a shomer chinam. In order to take that shvua, it's only going to be in a case where it's ki hu zeh. The shoel, it starts with a vav. Veh. Chiyish al ish. So vechiyish al means add this pasuk to the previous pasuk. The previous pasuk discussing shomer sachar. The shoel has all of those dinim because vav mosif al inyan rishon. Vav shows this to be a continuum in which we're discussing all of the dinim one after the other. A socher. Well, a socher is either a shomer sachar or a shomer chinam. Ilaman yomek shomer sachar, I know shomer sachar. Ilaman yomek shomer chinam, I know shomer chinam. An issue which we will get into in detail when it comes to Bar Metzia. Vim Reb Chiya Bar Yosef. Another maimer of Reb Chiya Bar Yosef is, and here is a consistent issue, again, the way Rashi is learning it. Reb Chiya Bar Yosef, remember, understood that the first pasuk of Elohim was referring to going to court about the issue Im lo shalach yadav im lechet re'ev. The second one was referring to halva'ah. There were two different court cases. Therefore, says Reb Chiya Bar Yosef, if somebody's going to be toin ta'anat ganav v'pikadon, he would only be chayav in the context of the shvua that he took. What was that shvua, according to me? Shelo shalach yadovim lechet re'eyu. So he would only be chayav if it had turned out that he was actually sholeach boyad. If he left the animal in the barn, and he tells the guy, your animal was stolen, the guy goes to court, for what? Swear to me that you didn't take the animal and use it to plow your field. How I swear. Now it turns out that he did take the animal to plow his field. Aha! There the shvua was the shvua that you needed to take. And that's where the Torah was b'chayev you kefil for toin ta'anat ganav. But suppose you swore correctly. I never used your shor. All that happened was it was stolen. But there was no shalach yadobi melechet re'eu. And indeed, you never had. You just decided not to give it back. In that case, there's no din of toin ta'anat ganav, being mishal and kefal, says Reb Chiya Bar Yosef. Because the only time that the Torah introduced the shvua was in terms of shlichut yad b'melechet re'eu.
Use of it, not just holding on to it.
Exactly. So my time, and why do I say this? Because it says beferish in the pasuk, v'nikrav ba'alabayit ela elohim im lo shalach yadov b'melechet re'eu. Can't you read? So the Torah says dafka im lo shalach yadov michlal, which implies that if in the end shalach b'yad, it turns out that you have been shalach yadov b'melechet re'eu, then you would be michayev. Which teaches us that the parsha is referring to the problem of shlichut yad. L'meimer de b'shalach b'yad askina. It all involves misuse, not non-return. On the other hand, says Reb Chiya Bar Abba, Reb Yochanan disagrees. And hachi amar Reb Yochanan be'omedet al evusa shana. We're talking about an animal calmly chewing its cud in the barn, never used for doing anything in your field. Omele Reb Zera le Reb Chiya bar Ava. Did that mean exclusively or even? Now, why do I say that that's an issue? Very simple. If I took your animal and used it in my field, I'm a Gaza. As a matter of fact, you'll remember that Reb Shesha said, the moment that you say I don't owe it to you, you're a Gaza. We said, no, it's only if you take a shvuah. But if I actually do it, I walk off with it, you're a robber. If you're a robber, there's no din of paying kefal. You're trying to cover your open robbery by claiming that there was a burglary. But what you're making a shvuah on is something that was already yours. You stole it. You can't be chayiv for saying a shvuah that somebody burglarized something that was already didn't even belong to the owner. You took it away from him. You're a gazlan. So maybe what Rabbi Yochanan meant was that, in fact, if you had done what Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef claims, you would not be chayiv kefal. It's not that I extend the din even to a case where it was stolen. I'm saying it only is in a case where it wasn't stolen. So that would mean that Rabbi Yochanan represents the exact opposite vision of Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef. This is what I would like to know, says Rabbi Zera. Was it Dafka bo minat alav Yusak Amar? Was Rabbi Yochanan been saying, no, Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef has it exactly backwards. The only time you would be chayav is if there was no shlichut yad. Avo shalach ba yad? Once you went ahead and were shalach ba yad, you were kone it as a gzela. At that point, shvua lo mahanya beklum. The shvua is totally meaningless. You're not swearing about something that you're watching for another guy. You're swearing about something that you stole. Swearing about something that you stole, there's no din of kefal on. Oh, Dilma, or perhaps Rabbi Yochanan was simply saying, well, it doesn't matter whether there was shlichut yad or not. Afilu omeret aleivu saka amar. Which way was it? Is it a mirror image of Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef, or is it an extension, even in a case where it's omeret aleivu saka? Omale, so Rabbi Chiya bar Abba said, not to be confused with Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef, remember, who's the one that's arguing. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba is the one who's quoting Rabbi Yochanan. Said Rabbi Chiya bar Abba to Rabbi Zera, truth is, Rabbi Yochanan never told me. I'm not sure whether he meant this as an expansion or he meant this as an exclusion, as a mirror image to Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef. However, I did hear a different halacha from Rabbi Yochanan that leads me to believe that I know the answer. Zulo shamati, this particular case that you're asking, I never learned from Rabbi Yochanan, but kayotseba shamati, I heard a case similar in principle, which could lead us to a solution. And that is that Rabbi Asi quoted Rabbi Yochanan as saying as follows. Suppose a shomer first says, your animal, oh dear me, it ran off, broke down the door and ran off. In such a case, since there's no imaginary ganav, the Torah was never mechayev you kefal if you were lying, right? So you first go ahead and you're toit anatavah, you swear, and then you come into court and you say, actually, that's not what happened. What happened was that it was burglarized. So v'chose v'ton tanat ganav, and now you swear to the new tanat ganav. Edim come along and say, you yourself kept it, you're potter. Now, why are you potter? I think I know the reason. The reason that you're potter is because you already stole it with the first shvuah. And that's the equivalent of shlichut yad. In which case, you see that Rabbi Yochanan holds, once you stole something, whether you took it or you swore about it in a way that wasn't mechayev you kefal, it doesn't matter if now you'd make a shvuah that would otherwise have been mechayev you kefal. Which means that the solution to your question is Rabbi Yochanan was exclusive, and he's the mirror image of Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef. Pretty smart of me, huh? Wouldn't you say, Rabbi Zera? So my time, alav mishum dekada b'shvua rishona, said Rabbi Zera, no, it's not pretty smart of you. It's wrong. Omar le lo. That is not the reason that you can't assume that that's why Rabbi Yochanan said you're potter on kefal. The reason you're potter on kefal in that case is because harov yatsa yedei baalim b'shvua rishona. It's not because you were kone it. It's because the second shvua didn't count. Tell me, when you make a shvua that the Torah was not mechayev, are you going to have to pay kefal? No. We already said, chutz lebezdin, kofetz v'nishma. Ridiculous. The court already took a shvua from you, and the shvua was that it had walked off, right? It escaped. All of a sudden, you walk back to court, gentlemen, I lied. actually it was burglarized. What does the court say to you? Frankly, madam, we don't give a damn. You already said you don't owe it. You swore. We're not interested anymore in the details. The owner has no tvia to you. He already accepted that shvuah. Just because you want to be honest, that's your own issue. There's nothing to do with us. This case is over. In which case, how can you be mechayev yourself kefil with a shvuah that the Torah was never mechayev you? The case was finished with the first shvuah. That's the reason, not because you stole it with the first shvuah, but because there's no need for the second shvuah. And therefore, you have not answered me at all. As a matter of fact, the Rosh says, look at the next piece of Gemara. Itmar nami, Amr Rav Avin, Amr Bilah, Amr Rav Yochanan. Here, indeed, we find Rav Yochanan being quoted as providing precisely that rationale for this psak. Hatoi tanat avedah b'pikadon, v'nishba, v'chazar v'tan tanat g'neva v'nishba, ubo edin, patur is patur from kefal. Ho'il v'yatsa yedei ba'alim b'shvu'a rishona. Because it was already yotzi, says the Rosh, you see, Rabbi Yochanan provides which rationale? Not the rationale that says, well, you already took it, but rather the rationale that the shvuah is meaningless. That indicates that it's specifically not what Rabbi Zera said. It's not exclusive. You see? All right. Not everybody agrees with the Rosh. But in any event, the way the Rosh is learning here, we've actually proven that Rabbi Yochanan would be perhaps happy with either case. He doesn't care whether it was Omer Alevuso or not Omer Alevuso, as opposed to Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef, who says, only if it wasn't Omer Alevuso, only if you used it. Omer of Sheish has a third opinion, the exact opposite of Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef. Hato'in ta'anat ganav v'pikadon, kima jishalach bo'yad patur. If he had used it, he'd be potter. My time, because the way to understand the pasuk is this. You take a shvuah if you hadn't used it. But if you had used it, you said, well, yeah, I used it. Okay, we'll give it back. It was stolen. You're potter, because you already used it. And once you used it, it's overs. You owe it for it. But there's no kefal. So it means we have three shitot. Reb Chiya bar Yosef, who holds only in a case where you were not shalach boyad. Rabbi Yochanan, according to the way the Rosh understands it, either way, whether you were shalach boyad or not. And now Reb Sheshes, who says only if you were not shalach boyad. Three different shitot. Omele Reb Nachman, said Reb Nachman, but what you've done here is you've isolated the shvuah of shlichut yad. But I mean, the truth is, Vahalo, is it not true that it says beferish of bab mitzvah that in cases of pikadon there are three separate shvuot? First of all, he has to take a shvuah that he wasn't negligent, because if he was negligent in the shmirah, oh really, it walked off, did it? Did you lock the door? Well, no. It was burglarized. Did you lock the door? Well, no. I mean, maybe it wouldn't have been burglarized if you locked the door. So obviously the first issue is, were you negligent? Part of the chiyuv of your shmir is not to be negligent. So you first have to say, I wasn't negligent. Now let's discuss what happened. Furthermore, shvuah shelo shalach li boyad, I didn't use it. And thirdly, shvuah sheinam rishuti, whatever happened was stolen. So that means that there's three separate issues. My love, shvuah shelo shalach li boyad, dumya de shvuah sheinam rishuti. I mean, I assume that these last two shvuot are similar. I mean, just like a shvuah. When you're swearing, it's not a my rishus. If it turns out that you are lying, ki magalya milta de ita rishus, it turns out it is in your rishus. So there you're chayev. The same thing would be true about a shvuah shelo shalach li bo yad. You claim there was no shlichus yad. If it turns out that there was shlichus yad, so then you would be chayev, right? And you're saying if you were shalach li bo yad, you'd be potter from kefa. Says Reb Sheshes, well, no. There's three shvuas. Maybe the first two shvuas are the same. Shvuah shelo shalach li bo yad is dumya shelo pashati. Just like the shvuah of shelo pashati ba. If it turns out that you were posheya ba, you're not going to be chayev in kefal. You're chayev for not doing the shmira. You're not chayev because of the toin ta'anat ganav. I mean, there's no issue of being a ganav here. You're going to have to pay because you were negligent. That's all. So the shvuah shelo shalach li bo yad, if it turns out that you were shalach li bo yad, you're potter from kefal, because you're chayev for having stolen it. not for having claimed that it was burglarized. That's how I understand it. So again, the three shitot are supported, each according to their own logic, by the structure of the psukim and by the dinim that appear in the Mishnayos and Brisos in Bab Mitzvah.